When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here,
reminding you that American Family Insurance agents can help build a customized renter's policy
so you can protect stuff like this,
or this,
or even this.
Case in point.
Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Not one, but two guests today, and not one, but two NBA champions, in fact, on the pod today. First up is Antonio Daniels, who won a title with the Spurs back in 1999, followed by Andre Iguodala, of course, a three-time champ with the Warriors. Wanted to bring on Antonio to dive into all the latest with the Pelicans. Big week for them. Zion, viral clips on multiple days, dunking on Corey Brewer. What's it all mean? Is he back soon? Will we see him before the end of the regular season? Should they even bring him back? Antonio's got some very strong and I think insightful opinions on all that. And you know, look, they're doing great with CJ McCollum now. They've got a different chemistry going. Can you just plug Zion back in? How is that all going to pan out? AD's got a bunch of great insight on that. Also talked a little bit about the Heat dust up the other night, his perspective on that. And of course, could not let him go without asking him a little bit about Greg Popovich, of course, too, and some really fun stuff about Pop. After that, we have a chat with Andre Iguodala. Like AD, one of the more thoughtful guys you're going to find in the NBA. Iguodala is part of a new documentary, which you can find online. It's called The Quest for Sleep. Sleep's a big topic for NBA players because their sleep patterns are all over the map between the travel, night games. The entire routine is pretty disruptive, plus just the stresses of the game and the lifestyle. But of course, sleep is vital for recovery and performance. And so Andre is among the people featured in this documentary talking about their own experience with it, their struggles to get a good night's sleep. It's really fascinating stuff. You can find all that if you want to watch it at questforsleep.com. It's really interesting. Highly recommend. Before we get to Antonio Daniels and Andre Iguodala, a quick reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. If you've got feedback, requests, complaints, whatever, hit me on Twitter at Howard Beck. Okay, Antonio Daniels, followed by Andre Iguodala, all coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now, very pleased to welcome an NBA champion way back in 1999. And one of the best, for my money, one of the best NBA analysts in the game on TV and radio, Antonio Daniels. AD, how are you, sir?
Howard, I am good, brother. Honored to be here with you, man.
Great to see you. I mentioned the championship back in 99. I'm going to circle back to that in a second. I should note, we're kind of pseudo coworkers because you host on Sirius XM NBA Radio multiple times a week. I pop in and do a shift here and there every so often, including occasionally with your partner, Rick Kamla. So we're practically coworkers, I guess is what.
Yeah. We kind of like brothers. Let's just put it that way. We kind of like brothers.
Broadcasting cousins or something. I'll take it. Before we jump in, I got a bunch of stuff I want to throw at you. Of course, a lot of Pelican stuff and certainly some Zion stuff because the man knows how to go viral and he's done it a couple of times this week. Before I get to any of that, there was a photo that made the rounds on Twitter earlier this week. You in your Spurs uniform talking to, I believe, Hank Egan, Spurs assistant coach. There's a very young Mike Budenholzer off to one side of that photo. And then in the background, your current broadcast partner on the Pelicans broadcast, Joel Myers, in the background, calling the game. I said it on Twitter. Neither of you have aged since then. I don't know how that's possible. But it's just a wild little, like a literal snapshot in time. You guys, future broadcast partners, him calling a Spurs game back then. Joel and I, of course, got to be friends during his Laker broadcasting days. That, where did that photo come from? Was that, in fact, the championship season? What do you know about that moment?
I don't know. Okay. I'll be honest with you. I don't know what season it was. Somebody sent it to me via Twitter. So obviously I retweeted it because I think it's amazing how things have come full circle.
Yeah.
You know, my years in San Antonio for a lot of those years, Joel called those games. And to think about how crazy that is, like we're talking over 20 years ago. And now it's just, you know, I'm a firm believer that the Lord has a plan. And now 20 years later, here we sit in 2022. My third season here being the color analyst for the New Orleans Pelicans, and my broadcast partner is Joe Myers, the same guy that was calling my games all the way back in San Antonio. So me and Joe actually laughed about it.
Yeah.
You know, a day or two later, we actually kind of laughed about it because he asked me, he said, where'd you get that photo from? I said, I don't know. You know, somebody just sent it to me via Twitter, but I think it's always cool. Just a good memory of kind of tying things together about how things started. You know, they do the whole social media things, you know, where they started and, you know, where they are now or how things are going now. So just to kind of go back then to now, tie it all together was kind of awesome.
No, it is really cool. I love it when we have that kind of symmetry in life, these kind of unexpected connections along the way. And, you know, like the NBA is a small world in a lot of ways, right? But still, there's, you know, you just never know where these connections lead in the future or connections you didn't even realize were there. I thought it was really cool. Like a fun moment there for sure. And Joel, of course, one of the great voices in the NBA, like that. Joel can make anything sound cool, man. That he could read the dictionary and it would sound amazing in Joel Myers' voice.
Yeah. And you call it connections. I call it relationships.
Yeah.
You know, I say all the time, I don't think there's anything more important in life than the relationships we develop, whether horizontal or vertical. That's the most important thing that we can possibly have. I tell young players that. I tell young people that. Always be cognizant as to how you treat people, because these are relationships that you'll need later on in life. You know, you may not know it at the time. I tell all the time, like a quick story, Howard. Yep. When I was in D.C., in Washington, there was a guy on our bench that was the last coach on the bench. The last coach, literally the last coach. And when we walked out and we walked in the next morning, that guy that was once the last coach was now the head coach because Coach Eddie Jordan had been fired. You know what I mean? So how quickly things would change. So now the relationship that you had with that guy at that time, now it's a little bit different when he's in that head position. So how you treat people and the relationships that, that's the best thing about my job now. Best thing about this job now is the relationships I've been able to develop along the way.
No doubt. And I would agree from my own perspective as a, you know, media person covering this league for the last 25 years, you know, former players who have become coaches and broadcasters, you know, guys who've worked their way up through benches and front offices, all that. It's amazing. It's one of the fun parts about the league. Let me actually ask you this real quick before we get into basketball stuff, because, you know, you won't remember this, but I do from my end of it. So I'm a Laker beat writer in the late 90s, early 2000s. So I covered, you guys smoked the Lakers a couple of times there along the way. And during a playoff series, for people who don't know how this works, for the beat writers, that's the time when you really like talk to the other team a lot, right? Lakers, Shaq and Kobe years, I'm immersed. It's all Lakers all the time. I'm barely ever going in the other locker room. I'm barely talking to the opponent. But in a playoff series, you guys, both teams are on the court every day, and we get a lot of both teams. That's when I like was in some scrums where Antonio Daniels is talking. I'm like, oh man, this guy's great. Like you could, at the time, this guy's a great interview, great insights. And you had a bunch on that team, right? Like Malik Rose was that way. Later, Steve Kerr, Sean Elliott, who of course
Avery Johnson, to.
Avery Johnson, of course, like Avery talk for days. I love Avery. I covered Avery during his Nets tenure here when he was coaching here. So But one of the things I've noticed over my time, Antonio, is that being a great interview, being great with the media on a day-to-day basis, talking about the rhythms of a season, doesn't always translate to being a great broadcaster. And I've seen a number of guys over the years fail to make that transition who I thought, great interview. Oh my God, he's terrible on TV. Mm-hmm. It feels like to me you made it seamlessly, and not just as a color commentator on Pelicans broadcast, but also, of course, hosting multiple hours a week on NBA radio. Did it really come that naturally to you, or was this something that, like, and when did you know? Like, we don't have to go deep on this. I'm just curious, because you, honestly, I don't mean to overpraise or pander to my guests. You're excellent at this, and I do feel like it, like, from my vantage point, it almost feels seamless that you were able to move into the second career.
Well, it's different, Howard, because I didn't want to do this at first. Hmm. I really didn't. I went to, what's it called? The Syracuse School for NBA players. The name is completely...
Is that the one David Falk is now partially funding?
No, I'm not sure. Okay. Gosh, this is killing me right now, because it's a great opportunity to actually plug what it is, and I can't remember what it's called.
I'll look it up while we're talking.
So I go there. It's me and like six or seven other NBA players, right? So it's a week of all media training. I was still playing at the time. So it's like, okay, my career is coming to an end. Let me start thinking about what I would like to do post-NBA career. So I go, and it's tough. It's tough. And I remember thinking at that time, Howard, that gave me a different respect for media. You never really understand or can respect someone's craft until you're asked to do it. So you hear people say all the time, man, if that was me, I would. Man, if that was me, I would. No. It's different. When you see guys on TV or women on TV and they're trying to articulate a point with a producer in the ear counting down from 15, that's not an easy thing to do. It's not easy to get on and articulate a topic to talk about for a minute and a half straight without saying, So when I left, I said, man, maybe this isn't for me. You know what I mean? And then slowly but surely, God began to open doors. Obviously, I had my own radio show in San Antonio, ESPN San Antonio. Really small is kind of how I started. And one personality of the year that year, woohoo, you know. And then from there, SiriusXM heard that show. And from there, at the time, it was Fox Sports Oklahoma. They heard that as well. And then I started working for the OKC Thunder as their in-studio analyst for four seasons. And, you know, just hearing the right people, hearing the right things at the right time is what led me to where I am today. And I'm a firm believer, Howard, God would not send me somewhere he is not qualified me to excel, you know, and doing what I do now, it is the ultimate blessing because I get to be me. You know, I'm not trying to be somebody else. You know, if you listen to the way I call games, I want you to feel comfortable. I want you to be entertained. I want you to be informed. But I'm not going to step out of who I am. I believe that we are all given different gifts, and that's a great opportunity to kind of just be myself. You know, let Joe be Joe, the best version of Joe, and me be the best version of me, and find a way to bring the best parts of each other out in one another.
The Syracuse, by the way, the Newhouse School.
Yes.
Newhouse. There we go.
Yes. Yes.
but
man, that killed me. I actually went back a couple of years ago as their keynote speaker, where players now that have thoughts of going into media post-career, I had an opportunity to talk to them. And the first piece of advice that I gave them is use what God gave you. Don't try to be something you're not. Like, I honestly feel like a lot of guys, when you say, like, gosh, you're really bad, I feel like they're really bad because they don't use what they have. It's like, okay, I see this guy successful doing it that way. Let me try and be like him. Well, yeah. What if that's him? Isn't you? You know, so
it's a great point. No, it's a great point. My other quick thought on this before we leave this topic, because I was looking back at the Spurs teams you were part of, right? Steve Kerr, become obviously a great head coach. Malik Rose, now helping run the G League, formerly in the Pistons front office, formerly Sixers broadcaster. Malik's done great. Sean Elliott, of course, on the Spurs broadcast. And I think about the Laker teams I covered. Robert Horry's doing studio work for the LA, for the Lakers station out there. Derek Fisher's been a head coach in various capacities. Brian Shaw has been a coach in various capacities. I think there's this, like, I've noticed this over time, like, some of the great teams, maybe it's not always a parallel, great teams have a lot of really bright guys who are really good at communicating, whether it's for broadcast purposes or coaching purposes. You had a bunch on your Spurs team, and after you, the other Spurs additions that won championships, the Laker teams I covered, just a lot of smart, thoughtful people, and it translates. And I still see them all around the game because they're either coaching or in broadcasting. And I think it's that thing, like, basketball intelligence and overall intelligence translates to winning and then translates to these other careers.
And you know what else translates to winning, though, Howard, is communication.
Yeah.
You can't be a good basketball team without the ability to communicate. It can't happen. You know, if you are a good defensive team, you communicate with one another on the floor and off the floor. You know, so a lot of the guys that you were just discussing, I'm not sure about, you know, I do know Robert Horry, but, you know, some of the other guys, I don't know Derek Fisher really well. You know, but some of the guys that I played with, you know, all the guys that you named, the Avery Johnsons, the Sean Elliotts, the Malik Roses, the Steve Kerrs, all of those guys were great communicators. Even guys that I played with, Brendan Haywood, who I played with in D.C., in Washington, great communicator, you know, from the center position. That guy that's in the back, he can see everything. The anchor of your defense, that's calling out where everything is. So is it a coincidence that now his NBA career is over and he works for NBA TV and calling college basketball games? No, it's not, because he was a great communicator. So when you look at really good Caron Butler, who's a coach now in Miami, yeah. You know, so when you look at really good basketball teams that were put together, one of the key foundations of that success has to be built on communication.
No doubt. No doubt. And I just thought it was a kind of a fun thing as I was scanning those rosters and I'm thinking, like, man, there's a lot of ex-Spurs from your era doing stuff around the league, just like I always noticed with those Laker teams I covered. Glad you mentioned Caron Butler and the Heat. This is running Friday, but we are taping on a Thursday. All right, so here's the thing, AD. Like, people from my vantage point sometimes see these kinds of incidents differently than you do as a former player. So, and it can go either way. Sometimes we see something and the former player will actually tell us, no, guys, that's no big deal. That stuff happens all the time. Don't overreact. But sometimes it goes the other way. Like, oh, no, as a former player, I can tell you that shit looks serious. Like, that one does concern me. And so I don't know which way you would go with that, but I'm watching that last night. And I was the kind of thing, I was watching a different game. It popped up on Twitter first and I went, oh crap, I better switch over. I don't know. That looked pretty serious to me. What did you make of that?
You know what looks serious to me? Like, I'm one of the players that generally when this stuff happens, like, all right, you know what, man? Look, it's a 6-month season. Okay. You're around each other all the time. You gonna get on my nerves. I'm gonna get on your nerves. All right, it happens. But for me, I always look at, like, the little things. Who's involved, first and foremost? Who's involved? And that person that's involved, are you used to seeing this sort of action from them, right? So the first thing I thought when I saw it yesterday, and I watched it numerous times, was Eric Spoelstra. He is the most mild-mannered, laid-back coach. To see him respond like that was different. That part was different. Not just the first part when they're sitting down, but then to get up again and then throw his clipboard on the floor. So that part to me was a little bit different, which almost begs me to think that maybe there was something underlying prior to that happening. You know what I mean? Because it's very rare, like, something like that happens. And it's like, oh, okay, well, I'm just going to blow up. Because it's usually, you know, something happens. All right, let me let it go. Something happens, I'm going to let it go. Something happens, I'm going to let it go. And if something happens, it's like, all right, look, I done had enough. You know, and yesterday looked like, I don't know what that quote unquote enough was, but yesterday looked like that enough for Coach Eric Spoelstra. But because of the leadership, and you hear it all the time, because of heat culture, do I think this is something that they can't kind of push behind them with a post-game meeting, with a pre-practice meeting this morning? No. Not at all. You get in a room, you talk about things, you understand you are a team that's in a championship fast lane in the championship conversation. And what you don't do is allow what we all saw last night to derail the bigger picture.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was intense. And I think obviously, you know, it's Haslam and Jimmy Butler are the two main parties here. But, like, your analysis of Spoelstra's reaction is interesting too, right? Because when he was sitting, he had that kind of like half grin on his face, like kind of like, come on, really? We're doing like initially he was trying to kind of like, you know, it, almost an eye roll, but then it got serious. And that's when it was,
and
like,
it
all
was
right,
like
enough.
Right.
That was wild. But listen, if heat culture, we should say hashtag heat culture. If hashtag heat culture means anything, they will get through this, right? Like, because this is Pat Riley's organization. This is Eric Spoelstra's organization. This is, to a large extent, and Isaiah Thomas said this very eloquently on NBA TV last night, Udonis Haslam is heat culture, right? Mm-hmm. Alonzo Mourning is heat culture. Like, these guys embody it and they have the history of it. And so a weaker organization, you see a blow up like that and I think, oh man, that could derail them. That team, granted, Jimmy can be volatile. And others on that roster, but like I have less of a concern because it's them than maybe I would a different team. And they've had such a great season too. Like, you're not going to get this close to the finish line and blow yourselves up. I don't think.
Right, like it's different to see this time of the year, because realistically, this is the time that you would love to be peaking. But yeah. I can tell you what we'll all do. What we'll all do from this moment now, Howard, we're going to look to this moment for the Miami Heat, and we're going to draw a narrative or a conclusion of something from it, of something. We're either going to say, one, oh, man, that's what turned their season around, and they never just could pick themselves up, or we're going to say, you know what, that was a launching point for a motivational sort of kick in the you-know-what for the Miami Heat. So it's going to be interesting to see how this last – month or so, 3 weeks or so for the Miami Heat plays itself out. But I guarantee you, whatever happens this last 3 weeks or so is going to stem back to what we saw last night, one way or another.
No, and you absolutely nailed it. You're right. One way or another, we're going to work this into the narrative of the season. Mm-hmm. That it's either one thing or the other. I have to laugh because it's inevitable, right? Like, this is
right.
But this is not just a media thing. This is how we are geared as humans, right? When we talk about narrative, a narrative is a story, and that's how we understand our surroundings, right? Mm-hmm. We put together cause and effect. Maybe it's relevant to this point, and maybe it's not. Well, I guess time will tell. But
We'll make it relevant. Yeah.
Man, you got a lot of hours for you and Kamla to fill on NBA radio every day. You'll make it relevant, right?
Right, for sure.
Let's talk about your Pelicans. Zion Williamson set the world on fire with, I said 3 seconds when you and I chatted briefly yesterday. It was actually, I think, 2 seconds according to the video clip. A 2 second clip of him dunking shirtless was enough to set Twitter abuzz. Doesn't take much to set Twitter abuzz.
True.
And then followed up, I think it was the next day, by the 10-second clip of him driving and dunking on poor Corey Brewer, who's a great guy. Is Corey Brewer, like, is he player development? What is he doing?
Yes.
For Pelicans? Okay.
Yeah, player development coach. Awesome at his job, too.
And a great guy. So,
yes, he is.
Another guy who was a go-to great guy for the media, great interview. We have these back-to-back days of Zion doing something, and then the last we've heard officially is he's cleared for some one-on-one. What does this all mean? What does it not mean in terms of the bigger picture here, right? We've been waiting all season. He was gone for a while. He's rehabbing in Portland. There's all this mystery, all this. And here we are. We are just down to the last couple weeks of the regular season. Pelicans fighting for position in terms of the play-in. Are we overreacting? Do we take anything out of this? What's meaningful? What's not?
Okay. So the question to ask, Howard, is what did you take from it?
Yes.
So I can't say if you're overreacting if I don't know exactly what you got from the 3 second clip or the 10 second clip. So tell me what you got from it, and then I will tell you if you're overreacting.
I personally, as the sober-minded, nuanced member of the media that I am, who just goes with the facts, as Shaq always told us, write what you see. I just write what I see.
Okay.
I look at it as, okay, he dunked. A dunk doesn't mean anything. A 2 second clip doesn't mean anything. And with apologies to Corey Brewer, driving and dunking on Corey Brewer in a 10 second clip doesn't mean anything in terms of whether or not Zion is ready to come back, and whether the doctors are ready to clear him, whether he's physically ready, whether the coaching staff wants to put him back in the mix at this late stage of the season. So those are the questions I have for you as the Pelicans expert and insider. Does, you know, and you're there for practices a lot of the time too, as a broadcaster too. You guys get to see a lot that we don't. What else have you seen Antonio, that gives you an indication of where Zion is in this process. And look, you're a former player who's gone through injuries, and everybody's different. But what is your sense as we sit here on March 24th of whether we will see Zion back in the mix with the Pelicans before the season ends?
I'll say, first and foremost, do I think we'll see Zion back in the mix with the Pelicans this season? Probably not. Because if you think about it, we are talking about 2.5 weeks remaining in the season. That's it. 2.5 weeks remaining. And we have to understand he hasn't played all year. He hasn't had one practice with head coach Willie Green. There are two teams this season whose best player have yet to lace up their shoes with their team. The Pelicans and the Clippers. Those are the only two teams. You know, so right now, would you risk bringing Zion back? I think what we allow the smaller pitcher to kind of cloud the bigger pitcher. The smaller pitcher is the fact that he averaged 27 points on 61% of the field last year. So you know what? We want to see him on the floor. The smaller pitcher is the fact that he's 1-1 in the history of the sport. I've never seen anyone with that size, strength, athleticism, ability to finish around the rim, creativity, and explosiveness all in a body type like that. Never seen it. That's a smaller picture. The bigger picture is his future, though. The bigger picture is, what does this look like 10, 12 years down the line? I tell this story all the time with Tim Duncan. We won the championship in 1999 with the San Antonio Spurs. The following year, I thought we had a better team. I thought we had a much better team. You had guys that were more cohesive, guys that were together, roles were more defined, all these different things. Tim Duncan got hurt right before the playoffs. But then the doctors released him and cleared him to play. Pop says, you know what? No. You're going to sit out. So we sat out the playoffs. We end up losing to Phoenix first round. Because the thing is, the smaller pitcher was another championship in 2000. But the bigger picture was a championship for the San Antonio Spurs in 2014 that Pop saw at the time that we couldn't and that fans couldn't. So I think sometimes we allow the smaller pitcher at the time to cloud the bigger picture. I know we want to see that young man on the floor. No one wants to see that young man on the floor more than me, calling these Pelicans names. Call it games next to B.I. and next to C.J. McCollum and next to Jonas and next to Herb Jones. Think about how this team will look. Jackson Hayes, these young guys, how bouncy, young, athletic, and lively this team will be. But what good does that do if you're risking all that for one season or two seasons? You know, the thing is, you want to make sure it's healthy so this can be something that's ongoing year after year after year after year, not just be concerned with this year in 2022.
So Willie Green may see that big picture and understand that. David Griffin may see that bigger picture and understand that. Ownership might even see it. Sometimes the player themselves do not, especially when they're younger.
Never do. No, that's why you hear all the time, Howard, you have to keep players from themselves. You know, and you can look back throughout the course of history and point at different guys. And if you set those guys down now and say, if you could do it again, would you? And they will tell you 100%, hell yes, I would. I would do it different. What I would do is I would listen to my training staff. I would listen to my medical staff, because maybe if I did or if I had, I may still be playing today. You know, and in Zion's case, I understand he's 21 years old. He wants to get back on that floor. And for me, I love this kid. I have a deep love for this young man, because I think what people lose sight of with Zion is the fact that he's 21 years old. I say it all the time, Howard. We think about it. When these guys are drafted, right? When they're one and done and they're drafted, they are 2 years removed from prom, right? They're 2 years removed from wearing tuxedos and limos and going to prom. And now basically what we're telling them, now we want you to be the face of a million, billion-dollar franchise. Yeah. And then we get upset when guys don't know how to handle it. Did you know everything at 21? I didn't. I didn't know what to eat at 21 years old. I didn't know how to take care of my body at 21 years old. Growth is not linear. But with young athletes, we expect them to have it all down right off the jump. And if you don't have it all, now social media trolls attack you from every possible angle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, he's this. Oh, and he's that. Oh, and he's this and he's that. And then he goes dark and goes to Portland and says, you know what? I'm just going to rehab because I need to get right and clear my mind. And people get mad at him from doing that. I tell you what, if I was 21 years old, Howard, and I had media trolls, social media trolls coming at me the way they were coming at him, I would have went dark too.
Yeah.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go away with my family and I'm going to get my mind right and I'm going to get my body right. But just because I do all that doesn't mean that when I return back and I'm back around and he is smiling like crazy here in New Orleans right now. Smiling like crazy. But with all that being said, just because he's back to being the joyful Zion that we're accustomed to seeing, that still doesn't mean that you put him back on the floor immediately.
Well, you talk about, you know, organizations needing to sometimes save players from themselves. If Adam Silver could invent or have somebody invent on the NBA's behalf something tomorrow where you could press a single button and black out social media for all Ooh. Players all the time so that they wouldn't be tempted to go wading into those waters. And some of them handle it just fine, right? Like Durant just like, you know, lives off of it. For him, it's just fuel and it's fun and whatever. Like, I don't think that ever throws off KD, but KD's also a vet and he's already seen it all,
right.
Done it all, lived it all.
But initially he didn't though. Remember how this worked though. Initially, because we are talking about guys like Zion and KD that are accustomed to being praised their whole life. Yeah. You know what I mean? So when I was in OKC when Kevin Durant, the article came out about KD where they called him Mr. Unreliable, and they apologized for it.
That headline, yeah, you know that mean? Was a huge thing
right.
back then.
So think, at UT, freshman, number two pick in the draft, great in high school, great at OKC, and then when he says, you know, when I'm leaving OKC and I'm going to Golden State, now is the villain part came. And that's where the social media started to take a twist. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So initially, KD, they called him sensitive. Initially, they called him sensitive, and now I agree with you, Howard. Now I love how he's turned it because now he just uses it as motivation to fuel his fire. But he also has years of experience in doing all this.
Yeah, but I think for a lot of guys, like it's just, I mean, shit. I'll say this for myself too. It's unhealthy. Like I spend too much time on it. Negativity, I will let get to me sometimes. I don't think it's healthy for players, especially younger players in this league. If I'm telling you, if Adam Silver could invent something tomorrow, push a button, black it all out so that players did not have to or didn't feel the temptation to even to live in that, everybody would be better off for it. Actually, I want go ahead. No,
what do you think is the most important? I had a conversation with somebody about this today. What do you think is the most important thing today to NBA players? Do you think it's winning? Do you think it's followers? Do you think it's money? What do you think it is?
Okay, so this is it's funny you ask because this is something I think about all the time. This is like a constant evolution in my own head, I think, or just process over the last 25 years of covering this league. I think with a place that I have come to over time is that the answer is absolutely different for every single player. There are players who are happy just to have the fame and the wealth and don't. I don't want to say they don't care about winning, but it's not the most important thing. It's not what drives them. They're there for the lifestyle and because they can. I don't begrudge them that. We can't ever expect everybody to be wired like KD or like Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan. Like, that's just not the case. Everybody exists on a spectrum with these things, with your personal motivations and values and all that. So for some guys, like the losing might really get to you. For some guys, it might just roll right off your back because it's like, I still have this great life.
Right.
And so I don't know how to answer it other than I think that everybody's calibrated a little bit differently and we shouldn't expect that these things matter to the same degree to every player. Is that essentially your...
Yeah, that makes all the sense in the world. But what's weird is it shouldn't matter the same to everybody. If it doesn't matter the same to everybody, then everybody shouldn't hit you with, I just want to win championships.
Yeah. Yeah, because we know it's not true.
Right. That's the most cliche statement in sports. And I say all the time, everybody says it. And what's missing at the end of that statement is unless.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, unless it affects my contract, unless I get my minutes, you know, unless I can get my bonus. So
I got to take a second seat to this other guy who's a bigger star and is going to get more shots.
Exactly. Yeah. Unless my role is shortened. So, yeah, I get it because I think that priority, winning, money, social media influence, followers, whatever it may be, I think that's all in the eye of the beholder of that particular individual. I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah. No, I mean, listen, why does Kyrie Irving leave LeBron James, the greatest player of his era, one of the greatest of all time, leaves him, decides it's time for me to go, despite going to the finals, winning a championship, everything else. I didn't quite understand it at the time. I've softened my view a little bit of it since then, but here's the thing, AD, like as fans, right? And before you were an NBA player, you were a fan of sports, right? Before I was a professional sports writer, I was just a fan. We grow up as fans believing in the mythology that everybody wants to win at the same level and that winning is the most important thing. And so even as adults, when we get a little bit more realistic or cynical about this, you still kind of want to believe in the myth, in the idea that...
The fantasy.
The fantasy, that nobody would want to leave a championship caliber team. Oh my gosh, why would you ever leave LeBron James? And there's still a part of me that thinks, why would you ever want to leave LeBron James? But Kyrie had other thoughts and goals in mind. And that's his prerogative.
Right. And anytime we have this conversation, where we're talking about players or organizations or individuals, I think what we forget about is how much ego is involved. You know what I mean? Like, we can have these conversations about different players and we can talk about money and social media and influence, all these different things. We forget about the ego.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that is a huge, but the NBA is a egotistical league. It is, because you don't make it there without an ego.
Exactly.
You did not make it. I'm not saying that it has to be overbearing and everybody's ego the same. No. But when you're in college and when you're in high school and when you are that guy, there's an ego that comes attached to that. And the most difficult part of the transition from college to pro is taking that college ego with you to the NBA level. Because what comes with that ego is that confidence. That is the hardest transition that I ever had to make. That same dude that was at Bowling Green State University, that was on SportsCenter, like, oh my gosh, you know what? You're going to go fourth in the draft and you're sixth in the country in scoring. Then you go to Vancouver where Sharif Abdul-Rahim is here, Bryant Big Country Reeves, and guys that have been in this league for 15 years, and you have to tell them what to do and have that same swagger about you that you had at Bowling Green. The guys that are really successful in this league can make that transition seamless, as you said earlier. They can make that transition seamless, and other guys struggle with it.
Yeah. Hey, before we move on, a couple of the things I want to hit you with before we go, but you had mentioned earlier about Pop deciding, even though the doctors had cleared Tim Duncan back in that 99-2000 season, you know what? We're looking at the big picture here. I need you healthy for years to come, not just the championship that they eventually won in 2014, of course, but 03, 05. And Tim Duncan's still young in his career at that time and has experienced success at the highest level already in his career. How did he take it? Because
he didn't like it.
Yeah.
He did not. He was not happy. I do remember that. He was not happy. Tim is still one of my really, really good friends till today, this day. And I can think all the way back then and think about that time. He was not pleased.
Yeah. So it's.
But it didn't matter.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter. You know what I mean? Because I tell you this, as a player, when I realistically know that my coach cares about me as a man, cares about my long-term future, and not just about the now, this is where a lot of problems come in. This is where you see a lot of disconnection, because a lot of players don't feel that that loyalty of now. You know what I mean? Of long term. They feel it just of now. Well, you just want to get out of me what you can get out of me right now. When I know that a coach is willing to invest in my long term future and cares about me, not just the player, but the man that I am and the man that I will become, man, put me in between those four lines. I'll run through a wall for you in a heartbeat. And Tim was not happy at that time, but eventually he grasped the concept of it. And that's really what it was all about.
Yeah. And there was a payoff there that he probably couldn't foresee, that he wouldn't know or understand until years later. And that's the leap of faith, I guess, that Zion has to make now. And listen, like, all right, you and I, not doctors, not trainers, but I look at Zion's build and the power that he has, his athleticism, and the injuries he's had so far, And from just a distance, I would worry. I would worry about this kid's future and his longevity and his health. And I would do everything possible not to rush him back. And again, I'm not a doctor, not a trainer, but the pattern so far early in his career is this big red flag. Like, man, you better be careful with this kid and don't, you know, like don't risk his future. So I'll be interested to see what the Pelicans ultimately do decide, whether he does play in the next couple of weeks. The temptation, I'm sure, is there. CJ McCollum has come in and given this team a nice jolt and an injection of a lot of stuff. CJ is great, and it's fun to kind of get to see him outside of Dame's shadow a little bit. But let me ask you this: like, whether it's in the coming weeks or maybe it's next fall, CJ, Zion, Brandon Ingram, the upside is I love a team that has multiple guys who can do something with their ball in their hands and can make plays and are great passers and all that. Like, I think that gives you a lot of advantage. The downside, of course, is okay, but now how do you distribute it and how do you find the right balance? What's your concern level about the blending of those three eventually, given their skill sets and their effectiveness of the ball in their hands and probably desire to have it as much as possible?
Well, for me, I don't have a concern level with that. I say this all the time. We are, and you know this, Howard, there's no more professional league that's as star-driven as the NBA is. Yeah. There isn't. One player makes a huge difference. You know, you can go back throughout the course of history and look at all the championship teams. How many of those teams had one dude? Fair rare. Not to say that it hasn't happened. You can think of like Dirk, because he had his Robin was Jason Terry at the time. Yeah. You know what I mean? Okay. But when you go down throughout the course of history, you're talking about a big two, a big three, or a big four.
Yeah.
Right? I say now, coaching talent is hard. Give me the talent and I'll figure the rest out. You know what I mean? I would rather have that than not be talent, not have talent out there and need to figure it out. Give me Zion. Give me B.I. Give me C.J. Give me Jonas. Give me Herb Jones. Give me Jackson Hayes. Give me those kind of players and I'll figure the rest out. Yeah. You know what I mean? Give me the talent. And now I tell you, I have an incredible love for Willie Green. A great, like, just the opportunity to be at every practice, at every shoot around, you know, sit courtside at every game, right to our right, and to see him communicate and speak life, confidence, and grace into his players. So what I'm saying is you get those six or seven guys as your core unit. I'm excited, man. I don't see a downside. I don't. We can say the whole, well, you know what? It's only one basketball to go around. And I get that. Yeah. I get that. But for me, on this side of things, let me see this team whole and healthy before I even start going to the negative side of things. Let me see what these guys look like on the floor together before I say, wait a minute, there's a chance that this can't work.
Yeah, no, totally fair. And I lean that way as well. Like, the natural thing for me to do, of course, as a media member is just go, well, but what if?
Right.
But you're absolutely right. First things first with any team, get the talent figured out later. And maybe you don't figure it out. Maybe it's not figure outable, but you won't know until you get there. And we won't know until they're together, which leads back to the temptation to want Zion sooner than later back on the court so that you can see what the potential of these three is and to try to get a head start on that chemistry and that blending for next season. But I, without knowing anything about his medical records myself, not being a doctor, I lean toward like, yeah, I hope they don't push him back out there too soon. I want to just see him healthy in a training camp next year and see what this team can do then. Before I let you go, Pop recently gets the record, passes Don Nelson for most wins in NBA history. It's a milestone. He's had many others that I think are probably more significant anyway. But still, it's a milestone and I got you here. So give me your best family-friendly Greg Popovich story.
Okay, well, it's not a story. I think it's a description of who Pop is. And it's funny because now as I sit here as an analyst, I get asked all the time if I want to coach. And if I am ever blessed to be a NBA head coach, I learn so much from Greg Popovich that I would take into that role or position. One of the things that I really understood at that time, you don't really grasp the concept. Because remember, Howard, this isn't the Greg Popovich of 2022.
Yeah.
This is Greg Popovich in 1999. He was just getting started. He hadn't won a championship yet. You know, we had a meeting on the bus in Houston midway through the season because we got off to a rough start. And we felt at that time, a team of players only meeting, if we didn't win that game, Pop was probably going to be fired. Think about how that would have changed the course of history, NBA history, not Spurs history, NBA history. One of the things I learned from Greg Popovich is something that I even apply to my children today. I have three children. I have Jada, who's 16, Jordan's 11 and a half, Antonio, who's 3. You can love them all the same, but you love them different. Because what you say to one of your children will motivate them. What you say to that same child, to another child, will break them. And Pop took the time to know each one of his players internally. So what he would say to Avery, he wouldn't say to me. What he would say to me, he wouldn't say to Tim. What he would say to Tim, he wouldn't say to David. What he would say to David, he wouldn't say to Mario. What he would say to Mario, he wouldn't say to Sean. So there was a love that he had for all of his players, but he coached us all different. He coached us all different. You know, you hear all the time, well, you know what? There was no totem pole in San Antonio. Yes, there was. There was a totem pole. We know who was at the top of that totem pole. You know, Tim, David, Manu, Tony, you know, those guys, they were at the top of the totem pole. But there wasn't a totem pole when effort was concerned. So there was a totem pole as far as role, but it wasn't a totem pole with effort. Every day we would sit in a circle and we would stretch. And Pop would go around to each one of his players and have a conversation with them about something that was going on in their life at that particular time. Just a coach to take the time to do that says a lot about you as a coach, but it also says a lot about how much he cares about you as a person. That's the thing I really took away from Pop is coaches. There's nothing more important to me in today's NBA, Howard, than the ability to relate to your players. Pop had this figured back in 1998-99. You can have all the defensive schemes and X's and O's and all those things. If you can't relate to your players, none of that other stuff matters. When you can relate to your players and speak, quote unquote, their language, they will run through a wall for you. And I learned that all the way back in 1998-1999 under Greg Popovich.
And the fascinating thing about that is we often think about Pop, we view him in almost the caricature of himself, which is this old school, irascible, hardcore throwback coach, right? Is he yell and whatever and like snap at people, get teased and all this. But the fact is, beneath all the rough exterior and all that is certainly there, is this really, kind-hearted, empathetic person who wants genuine to get to know his players, who's genuine and who genuinely cares for his players. And so it's because he can do both, right? You have coaches who can only do one or the other. It's because he can do both that makes him the great coach, a great man that he is. And people focus sometimes too much on the crusty part without right. realizing or recognizing the arm around the shoulder thing and the conversation and the smile and the ability to kind of coax the best out of guys because he's also connected with them so that when you come down on them, they understand it's not personal, right?
Right. And you just said something, and obviously this is a conversation for another day. That's why I consider Greg Popovich the greatest coach of all time. Because of his versatility. His versatility from one decade to the next decade to the next decade. That's why I consider him the greatest coach of all time. I know we don't have time to go into it right now. His ability to adjust on the fly, his ability to cater his offense to the skill set of his players, all of those different things, along with everything that you just added, Howard. The part that people don't see past the quote-unquote crusty part, you know, the arm behind the shoulder, the open door policy, and mean it.
Yeah.
You know, you haven't played for 4 or 5 games, bring you in and talk to you, ask how are you feeling mentally, all of these kind of things that people don't know that goes on with Greg Popovich behind closed doors.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You got to see it up close. I've got to see it a little bit from a distance, and it never ceases to be impressive. Antonio, this has been phenomenal, man. I'm glad we were able to do this. Thank you for making some time. I know you have much talking left to do today between radio shows and Pelicans games and everything. I hope I didn't wear out your vocals at all, but Joel Myers can carry you through the game. Like Joel could do it old school Chick Hearn style. He could probably just do it by himself if he had to. So
don't say that because you may give him ideas. You may give him real ideas. No, but it was truly a blessing, man. I'm honored. Thank you, Howard.
No, pleasure's all mine. Thank you. Now, very pleased to welcome an 18-year, and that part is relevant to this conversation, 18-year NBA veteran, Andre Iguodala. Andre, how are you, sir?
Oh, we're live.
Oh, we're live to tape.
I'm kidding. That's an Evan Turner, who I'm doing a podcast with, Point Four. It's one of his famous moments in sports history where he cursed while he was doing the media day for Philly. And he got in big trouble. He cursed twice, and then he decided to say, "Oh, we're live." And it was like, "What did you think this was?" So he didn't get enough sleep that night, so his brain wasn't functioning properly.
There we go. Way to bring us in with the topical anecdote there. I hope Evan got fined for that. Did he get fined?
That's a great question. I don't think so. I think it gave him the honest mistake response, and he was okay. He survived it.
All right. Well, on this podcast, you can curse all you want, Andre. We don't bleep anything, so it's all good. I mentioned 18-year vet at the start because I know that the only way that somebody makes it this long into an NBA career as you have is just incredible attention to detail, to health, to nutrition, to training, to everything, which obviously includes sleep. So The Quest for Sleep is the documentary. You are among the featured people in this. How did you come to this? What drew you to it? And what are the own, like your own sleep challenges that you've had in your career that that made this of interest to you?
Well, it was, I have been doing a lot of things in this space. I had tracked my sleep a few times. I've been in a few books, did a few fireside chats on it. And it's just been in my ecosystem. It's kind of become a part of what they call it, the brand. And, you know, that law of attraction, but connecting with folks who have similar interests and, you know, saw this pretty cool doc and got involved in it. And it felt very organic. And I'm big on, you know, organic, natural ways of healing. And it just worked out, you know, part of, you know, I always say, once you master something, it's your job to go back and teach it. You know, one of my duties to, you know, teach these kids how to have longevity. Careers are shortening up, you know, they're pushing them in and out and just getting their minds and their bodies right.
Do teams actually talk about this at all, Andre? Because when you came into the league 18 years ago, there was not nearly the attention to nutrition and sleep schedules and everything that there is now. Are teams today, are the Warriors and other teams actually addressing this with guys? Because you talk about telling the young guys, but I wonder how much they're also just being guided on this and the importance of sleep for recovery and everything else by your training staff and medical staff.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're seeing more trackers being implemented, you know, whether it's on fingers, on wrist, heart monitors, you're seeing all that stuff, you know, the heart monitors on the court. The big thing with athletes now in sports is recovery. Recovery has become the foundation of, you know, the training staff. And that's the part of how long your career can be. So I'm always giving those messages to the players. You know, they always ask me how I last so long or, you know, what goes into my, you know, training or the thought process behind, you know, how I balance everything that I'm doing, which is, you know, I'm still trying to figure out. So I got a 19-year-old next to me and a 19-year-old, you know, two lockers down. So constantly just giving the feedback, you know, when you're that young, you know, you can get away with it, but I always know you got to build those habits. So it's not a life altering or it's not this, you know, this huge change that you're making, you know, you can kind of just ease into having great habits to continue to progress in your career and play as long as you want to.
When did you realize, Andre, that sleep was going to be a key part of this? Or did you struggle with sleep at points in your career? And how did you get that under control?
Yeah, well, I always knew that I didn't sleep at night. So I knew that, you know, I knew what was causing it. You know, it was a lot of stress and just being a professional athlete and, you know, some things self-inflicted. So just realizing I wasn't sleeping enough and, you know, things were starting to settle down. You know, with my balance off the court, family and, you know, kids in the house. So just kind of wanted to get everything in tune with all the different moving parts. you know, things I'm doing off the court, things I'm doing on the court with the family. And I knew I had to get this, the sleep part right. It was something I had been tackling. Started in college, and I think the biggest part for me was I came to the Bay, and being in the Bay, you got access to all the data you could think of. Like anything dealing with human behavior is at your disposal. So what I did was, you know, it's almost like therapy. The hardest part of it is just trying to get there to therapy for the first time and just getting the rhythm. And it was just time for me to just get to a sleep therapist, just make sure it happened, and, you know, hold myself accountable and taking care of myself, essentially.
So, Andre, the thing that's always hit me in the many years that I've been covering this league, in large part because I've often been on the same schedule as you guys, right? I'm covering these night games. You guys, you're at your peak performance physically, mentally, emotionally, from like 7:30 to 10:30 at night. And then we could also throw in time zones to just screw it up even further. And then you're wired for hours after that, right? Like, you don't just come down, drive home, and hop in bed. And I mean, this same thing happens for us who are covering the game because we're wired from deadline, and it's hard to wind down. What have you learned or figured out for yourself over the years in terms of how to get yourself from post-game to a state where you can actually relax enough to get a decent night's sleep? And what does that look like? Like, could you take us through what a typical post-game or night is like after a game?
After going through like sleep school, that's all the sleep therapy is. You're just going through sleep school. You're learning about sleep and how it works. And it's more than just eyes closed dreaming. And there's different levels of sleep. You know, there's a REM sleep and there's the deep sleep. And each one has the optimal hours and or the time slot for each level of sleep. But then there's also the environment that you're in when you're sleeping. And then there's also what you put your body through to get to sleep. And temperature is a big part of that. So when you get out of that game, it's just like, you know, driving for 4 hours, that car's got to cool down. So it takes some time to cool down. Same thing with the body. So first thing you try to do is eat as fast as possible after the game. Because when you're, when you eat, all the blood flow goes to your stomach so you can digest your food. So that's the body working there. So you don't sleep well if you go to bed right after you eat. Like, you're going to wake up, and if you have a tracker, it's going to tell you, you know, you ate too close to bed because your body was still active. So you want to eat right after the game. You know, ice tub will bring the temperature of the body down a tad, but it's still running. Even when your mind's working and the body's not active, that's still the body working as well. So, you know, you got different tactics. Temperature is a big thing, though. I always have my room on like 68 degrees, which might seem frigid, but yeah, that's just my optimal temperature to get to bed. And another thing is like what you wear to bed, and then how the mind is so powerful. Like, wearing, you know, basketball shorts and a shirt to bed, it might tell your body, your mind's thinking, oh, I'm about to go play basketball, as opposed to wearing pajamas. You know, the body gets used to saying, okay, this is the time I go to sleep. So just getting your mind in that place. So, you know, my wife says no TV. I haven't had a TV in the bedroom since like 2011. Like, it's been 10 plus years, because that TV in the room is bad. And then airplane mode with the phone. And then that's part of me going back earlier, teaching the rookies habits. It's like, these are habits you want to build. So it might sound like I'm saying a lot, but it's just like small things that you integrate into your life, and habits that you integrate to help you be at your optimal self when you really need to be, which is on the court.
Okay, honest answer. How many hours of sleep during a season are you getting on a given night?
Like, right now, I'm not sleeping. Or this past week, I've been better. So, you know, I have a sleep score, and like 80s are good. Now, I've seen 80 like twice this year. But like, it's something that I'm constantly working on, just juggling two jobs and with the family. It's gotten, you know, it's just a juggling that I'm working on. But, you know, I had acupuncture today at 1 o'clock. What you want me to say? My wife says, how many hours did you ask me? I didn't answer your question, so I got to make sure I'm asking the question. She's my rock. She's my everything. I'm getting at like average probably 6:45, because some nights it's like 7:50. Other nights it's like 5:30. So I'll probably say 6:45, but I need to get like 8. When I get 8, I'm a superhero.
So what's messing you up right now? Like when you're not getting good sleep, what's the issue? Because you're not playing right now. You're still rehabbing. So what's messing you up your sleep schedule at the moment?
Rehab, and any NBA player, any athlete will tell you this. Rehab is worse than playing.
Really?
Because rehab is like you come in for shoot around. Anytime you have rehab, you have to be there extra early. So I'm talking like I normally get to the game at like 4:30, 4:45. Rehab, I have to get there. I have to be ready to go at 3. So that's just an extra almost 2 hours you're there early. And then, you know, you're working up until game time. And then now I'm at the game and I'm one of the vets. So I'm active with coaching the players. So my mind's working just like I'm playing, even though I'm not playing, plus the rehab on top of it. So I'm not, you know, and then obviously keeping up with the tech stuff that I have going on. I have to, you know, be up to date on what's going on with the markets or, you know, investor emails and, you know, any new opportunities that may come up. You know, I just told you about the podcast that I have with Evan Turner that's been well received thus far that I'm working on. So it's just a lot of moving parts projects. You know, my son's in high school. He's about my height now. So making sure he's not soft as Charmin being a rich kid. but it's all like you know how we are. We're trying to be superhumans and, you know, I don't want to get too, you know, crazy with it. But the capitalist system teaches us to try to take on the whole world when we're not, you know, built to do all that, but just trying to make my impact with a lot of things that I have going on. But I'm excited about it, but at the same time, I have to be conscious of having that right balance.
So when you're not getting good sleep, is it because part of it, obviously, you said it's the schedule, but is it a mind, your mind is racing kind of stuff? Like there's just you just listed a lot of stuff, Andre, that is consuming your day. That's a lot to think about. Is it partially just that it is hard to shut off the brain to get to bed?
That's a part of it, you know. And then you got days where I didn't quite get all my reading done. So, you know, like those emails, they keep flooding, you know, like my partner at my tech fund, she hit me today and said, you know, I hadn't checked my fund email account and I missed something important. So, you know, just missing on things like that can really affect me in my mindset because, you know, I'm trying to prove that I can do all this at the same time. And I pride myself on being good at what I do, whether it's on the court or in the tech space. So, you know, those emails, they get backed up and I get late at night and I'm thinking, go get to the email. And that's usually what's getting.
Yeah. All right. So what's the advice then you're giving to anybody who's listening to this podcast, if they've had the same kind of challenges or struggles? Obviously, we're in a very wired world. We all feel like we have too many things to do. We all are on our phones probably too much and too late at night. Like what's the best advice you give to people now?
Well, there is you can quantify the financial benefits of going to sleep. And you know how humans are. There's a way that we can get people to open their eyes and open their ears. And that's when we start talking about money. There is a direct financial effect of your productivity. And that's correlated with how much sleep you get and how you recover and how sharp your mind is. And I always use this, like somebody that may work for 20 hours, but is sleep deprived, is probably less efficient and will get less work done than someone who sleeps or than someone who's working for 6 hours and that has a proper amount of sleep. So although you might be working more, you're not as productive and you're not doing as well as you should be if you get in the proper amount of sleep and your mind's in a good space.
See, now they're going to be thinking about that. That's going to stress them out and they're going to have a hard time falling asleep because they're worried about their lack of productivity, Andre.
Well, if you take your behind asleep and get that process down, then you actually have more confidence waking up. Like, oh, that was refreshing. Now I feel like, you know what it feels like. And that's when I started to buy in, when I had all the stats that were telling me when I got a proper amount of sleep versus the stats when I didn't get the proper amount of sleep. Now I'm really excited about getting to bed on time. And when I'm in that bed by, you know, 10:30 and I'm about to put the lights out and I'm already ready to go to sleep, I'm thinking to myself, tomorrow I'm going to crush it. So it's all about how you look at it and how you have the right perspective and trying to take care of yourself.
No doubt. Before I let you go, a couple of quick questions here. We talked about your rehab How close to the end of that rehab are you? When are we going to see you back out on the court in uniform?
Yeah, I hope we're at the end of it. But as you know, the older you get, the longer it takes to, you know, to get back to yourself. So I feel like we're getting better and better by day. It's taking me longer than I would like, but, you know, it's part of the process. And you got good days, you have bad days. You know, like we always joke in the NBA, like players are no longer sitting out, because sitting out is not fun. It's not a break. It's actually more work. So it's hard. You know, there's a lot of hours being put into this rehab. And, you know, the scary part is, you know, we tell ourselves we'd rather play hurt than rehab. So I'm trying to be patient, because I've come back too fast once or twice this year, and I'll be back out there soon, I hope.
We're going to see you before the end of the regular season?
That's the plan.
And on that note, as you and I record this, it's going to post later than this, but as you and I record this, Steph just went out with that foot injury. What, you know, Steph, Clay, and Draymond got exactly one game together so far, and we don't know when Steph will be back now. What's your concern slash confidence level with this team going to the postseason in a few weeks, knowing that, you know, your big three really haven't had that much time on the court together this season?
Well, I think as long as we're on the court, I'm confident. So, you know, just praying for the best with the recovery, and, you know, hope when we get opportunity to really go at it full throttle. Because, you know, we've, you know, our finals, all our finals are not, a lot of our finals, except with, I think, 17, with the exception of 17 and 18, I think, too, you know, you had some weird injuries thrown in there. So hopefully we can get, you know, full squad and give it a shot.
Well, that there's one thing we know. It's that you guys have pretty much seen it all and done it all by now. So probably there's no one thing the NBA season can throw at you guys that would be daunting. And hopefully we see a fully healthy Warriors squad when you guys hit the postseason. The film, again, is The Quest for Sleep. Folks, you can find that at questforsleep.com, and you can watch the film there. It's also in select theaters. Andre Iguodala, part of that. And the podcast, again, you've already plugged it twice. Give it one more before you go.
Yeah, it's a Point Four podcast with Evan Turner and myself. It's where it's the blending of sports and culture. So just a mind of two athletes that have pretty much seen it all. And, you know, we have our perspective views on how we see life and culture and how it moves the world. And it's deeper than just, you know, throwing a ball, however it's thrown in that particular sport, and, you know, with the thought process behind it. So very excited about it.
Good stuff. I'm going to go add that to my queue as well, even though, as I've told JJ Redick and others over the years, it's really not fair that you guys are doing this and like being better at being in the media than we in the media actually are. You're actually, I think, endangering our livelihood, but it's okay. You guys are good at this. I like listening to you. So best to you and Evan on the podcast. Folks, again, Quest for Sleep. Go check that out. Andre, this has been a blast, man. Thanks for joining us.
No, appreciate you having, and we've learned from you guys. That's all. You guys have reminded us too many times about the horrors of life after sport and how guys struggle. So we've just adapted, and, you know, we found our lanes. But I think we all can coexist with the fighting for all the content right now. The different players in the space. There's plenty of room for us all.
Amen.
And we'll start collabing. We'll start collabing in the future.
Let's do that. Thanks, Andre. Really appreciate it, man.
All right, take care.
Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Antonio Daniels and Andre Iguodala. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Shelby Royston. And thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And then on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.